observing the disappearance day of His Divine Grace Tamakrishna Goswami Maharaj, which took place in 2002. That makes it 6 years ago. It's a long time. In addition to speaking about this verse, I was requested to speak something about Tamal Krishna Maharaj, as for instance Srila Radhanath Maharaj did on Bhaktivedanta Maharaj's Vyas Puja. I guess I have to preface by saying that I didn't so much like to do that. For the reason that I find these type of occasions, Srila Prabhupada's appearance, Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, or appearance, disappearance, ceremonies of friends, acquaintances, loved ones, that it's a, the fact that it's public is sort of contrary to the very nature of a personal observance. Personal, or particularly in a either sad or happy occasions, when they're deeply personal, then they become very difficult to really sort of express in an official circle, in a circle of greater Vaishnavas, where generally we do things in an official way, and we do things in a sober way. So I'm just mentioning that because the only way I know how to balance that is to make the make things that are very perhaps personal, or something that has a personal impact, ordinary, so that it's easily voiceable. I don't know if other Vaishnavas have the same difficulty or find themselves in a similar situation. This day was particularly, in one sense, it was the sort of most dramatic day of my Krishna conscious career, which means my life. Krishna consciousness is extremely exciting, as you may have experienced in different ways. Sometimes the excitement is not the type of excitement that you want, but it's a very exciting movement. Rarely are people bored in Krishna consciousness. If you are, then you can just volunteer to sit on the GBC. I guarantee you you'll never be bored. There's always lots of exciting things going on. And of course, the most traumatic experience that I can say was without comparison was Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. But it was different from this in the sense that I was far away in Chicago sitting. After hearing the news, I sort of sat in a room in the temple and just looked at the walls for 3 days, so there wasn't really much else going on. Except for that feeling of separation. As usual, Tamal Krishna Maharaj made things very exciting on this day. It was a very exciting event. It started just as we're sitting down after Tulsi Puja, chant Gayatri. There was an accident, and then I'm not going to get into the story. You all know what happened, but it was a long day. It was an extremely exciting day. It started with convincing Jai Pataka Maharaj that he shouldn't chant Gayatri when I was trying to talk to him. And that then getting the car, and I was packing into a car, and going off to not exactly knowing where, just somewhere beyond Shantipur, on the road, finding the car, then picking up where he actually was, and then discovering that he'd already departed from this world. Subsequent to that, there was also, or parallel with that, there was also Kalasambha Prabhu's wife. Myself and him were chanting to her as she was leaving her body. And then trying to convince them to let the body go, to not to do an autopsy. And then once everything was finished, then trying to negotiate with, I don't know, a sea of Bengalis who heard that the saint had just left his body and they weren't about to let us take him out of the hospital mortuary unless they all got darshan of him. And they weren't about to let us go. And then, of course, coming back here and the whole ceremony and the temple room, and it was a long day. And who was here at that time? The devotees were here. A lot of devotees were here. So it was a real extraordinary occasion. As I mentioned, it's perhaps one of the most memorable. In a sad way. Anyway, so I'll try and intersperse a few things about Maharaj. But let's read the verse and see what Srila Shukadeva Goswami also has to say today. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Shri Chitome Kshitir Varghi. Lavyamana Rasangata. Tatra Kim Manushteyam. Asmabhi sarga yojitai yasyaham hridayadasam saisho vidadatune shri jato mekshitir vadhir labhyamana rasangata tatra kim manushteyam Vasmabhi sarga yojitai yasyaham hridayat asam isho vidadatune.
Ladies,
Yashovi Dhatume.
Shri Jata.
While engaged in creation.
Me.
Of me.
Kshiti.
The earth.
Varbhi.
By the water.
Plavyamana.
Being inundated.
Rasam.
Depth of water.
Data.
Gone down.
Ata.
Therefore.
Atra,
in this matter,
kim,
what,
anushteyam,
is right to be attempted,
asmabhi,
by us,
sarga,
creation,
yojitai,
engaged in,
jasya,
the one from whose,
aham,
I,
Hridayat,
from the heart.
Asham,
born.
Sa,
he.
Isha,
the Lord.
Vidadatu,
may direct.
Me,
unto me.
Brahma thought, while I have been engaged in the process of creation, the earth has been inundated by a deluge and has gone down to the depths of the ocean. What can we do who are engaged in this matter of creation? It is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us. Brahma thought,
while I have been engaged in the process of creation,
the earth has been inundated by a deluge.
Gone down into the depths of the ocean.
What can we do
who are engaged in this matter of creation?
It is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us.
Here's a real short purport by Srila Prabhupada.
The devotees of the Lord, who are all confidential servitors, are sometimes perplexed in the discharge of their respective duties, but they are never discouraged. They have full faith in the Lord, and He paves the way for the smooth progress of the devotees.
This is a sort of famous verse. Famous in the sense that I don't know how current it is, but even before I was a devotee, this Lord Varaha's fighting with Hiranyaksha used to be on one of the radio Krishna tapes. And I remember just this word for word, what can we do who are engaged in the matter of creation? It was Venu Gita and Sudama Brahmana. And for some time, I think it was Mukunda Maharaj who arranged for the, on some radio station, there was airing of Krishna book. And that was also recorded, so we used to listen to these, and this was one. That's why this verse is very familiar. So here, the Lord Brahma is thinking, and interestingly enough, although Srila Prabhupada doesn't include it in his translation, it is in the purport. Hridayat. Yasyaham Hridayat Asam. He says, born from the heart. Aham. I take it this refers to Brahma as being born from the heart of the Lord. Which indicates Lord Brahma's extraordinary or unique position. Obviously, he's the first created being, the first living entity, and although he's appearing on a lotus, but his actual origin here is being ascribed to being directly manifesting from the heart of the Lord. Of course, in a realistic way, all living entities are born from the heart of another. Srila Prabhupada, in describing the principle of Garbhadhan Samskar, points out that it's not simply the intercourse between man and wife, which is the cause of birth, but rather the consciousness of the two, which means the condition of the heart, whereby a living entity is attracted to take birth by that type of union within the womb of a lady, and then from there he appears in a particular family. So, as Lord Brahma, he's born, but he's born, he has no mother. He's born directly from the Supreme Lord, and so sometimes he's called Aja. He's not born like we know living entities to be born. Srila Prabhupada made this comment that yes, Artamal, he is also like a little like Lord Brahma. Prabhupada was using the example that he said just like Lord Brahma likes to control, similarly to Mal, he also likes to control his environment. So that was just a parallel in between today's verse, the personality who we're speaking about, Lord Brahma. And there is that's not the only parallel. Lord Brahma is obviously known for his great intelligence. Devotees all in our Krishna consciousness movement, whatever sort of interaction or relationship they had with His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj, they all appreciated his very extraordinary intelligence. Very unique intelligence, very analytical, very pointed, and Srila Prabhupada very much appreciated that intelligence, so much so that when he saw that intelligence applied to understanding Krishna consciousness here in Mayapur, and the other, that used to be our temple room, when Srila Prabhupada had one of his godbrothers come and visit, then he made this statement. He asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj to give class. He says that he has grasped our philosophy, our siddhanta. So like that, there are things in common between Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Lord Brahma. I can't even remember the dates anymore. Unfortunately, my memory for history is not very good. But sometime back in the late when did the incident happen with Jayanta Pataka Maharaj? Chidamani? What year was that? 88. So that was 1988. We were traveling around through England, and he had come to England at that time to visit, and he found out that I was writing a book on creation, and coincidentally, he was writing a book on creation, which meant that we have to write a book on creation. In other words, there couldn't be two. It never actually got published. I never finished it, but it would be curious to find out who we meant if it actually did get published. But he did actually finish it. I just sort of left it there. I thought, well, it's already going on. But anyway, we traveled around England. I was doing my GBC duties, and then he thought that we should travel together and look over our manuscripts and work together and see... see how things were working out. Anyhow, I remember one day just going to this Ishwarabhav in a theistic sense, not in the way Krishna mentions it in the Bhagavad Gita, sort of the controlling propensity Tamal Krishna Maharaj had, and how with his intelligence he had the ability to actually control himself. That was very important, because no one else generally could control him aside from Srila Prabhupada. So we had, we were in Liverpool, and
And there was some disagreement. We were staying in our motorhome, in my motorhome, and I had a rule, is that you couldn't use the toilet because my deities were there, and that was very uncomfortable for him. So we had an argument about this, that this was ridiculous, not using the toilet in the motorhome. And what that meant was that in the evenings we were parked up in some park in the middle of Liverpool. He would have to go outside in the park if he would have to pass. So we had a little disagreement about that. And at one point he really started chastising me. And by that time our relationship developed to the stage where if things got a little out of hand, I would just start smiling and laughing. So, but then he controlled himself and he said, I'm sorry, I apologize. I got used to being an acharya for such a long time, it's hard to give up the habit. And he was very honest. He was a very honest person. And we had a very honest relationship. Anyway, but we didn't use the toilet. He had to either choose the park or wait until we drove back to the temple. I didn't inspect to find out which it was. So Tamal Krishmaraj was like that. And here we see that Lord Brahma, he's making this particular statement that although he was engaged in serving the Lord, while I've been engaged in the process of creation, he's doing his service, Srila Prabhupada pointed out, that even while engaged in service, devotees become perplexed. What's my duty? What is it that I'm actually meant to do? Of course, the source of perplexity is many-branched, or has many causes. One is we're in the material world. And not only are we in the material world, we're in Kali Yuga. So if anything can be difficult at any time, it's in the material world during this particular age, it is extremely difficult to understand what to do, pravritischa, nivritischa, although Krishna says that not knowing what's right and what's wrong is the characteristic of a demon. But actually, to be very clear on what the right course of action is, well, there's this little book, Krishna Bhajanamrita, not the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Mahakavya, but this very small book which talks about Guru Tattva. And this Narahari Sakar, he begins by introducing it, saying that in this Kali Yuga, he says, pure devotees, even great devotees, become sometimes bewildered as to what actually the principles of Dharma are. So it's a, it's not an unusual thing not to be particularly clear about what to do. And here Lord Brahma, he's admitting, he's not clear. What is it that I should do? I was doing one thing, and meanwhile, a calamity occurred. We know what that calamity is. It's due to Hiranyaksha's exploiting the earth and therefore causing the earth to fall into the Garbhodak ocean. What to do? He didn't know what to do. He didn't have a solution for that. Not only is it because we're in the material world, but perhaps sometimes such mistakes come as a result of defective service. In any case, Srila Prabhupada says, sometimes devotees are perplexed in the discharge of their respective duties, but they're never discouraged. It's very difficult when you're Manda, Sumanda, Manda Bhagya. Srimad Bhagavatam begins like this by defining the disqualifications or the effects of this age. Repeating something, especially repeating it with different qualifiers, means that it's very important. Sukadeva Goswami, therefore, says, or Sutta Goswami is saying, in this age, people are very disturbed, they're always unlucky, but they're always using this word manda. So, we're already at a disadvantage. Therefore, knowing what to do is not surprising, and it's not surprising for great souls. In later on in the first canto, when Bhishma Dev is lying on the bed of arrows in his abridged, because Srimad Bhagavatam gives an abridged version of the very long shiksha that Bhishma Dev gives to Maharaj Yudhisthira. He says, Nayasya karachit rajan puman veda mritsitam. He says, one thing, Rajan, you should come face to face with is that muyanti kaviyopihi, in the matter of knowing just exactly what is the Lord's plan, even the kavis, even the very learned personalities, they're muyanti, they're also bewildered, they become bewildered. So neither is it black and white how to conduct oneself here in this world. It's not an easy thing. Neither is Krishna's plan readily visible, as for instance we see in the nature of this particular lila. But in every circumstance, what should happen? Here he says, Saisha vidadhatu me, that I should be directed by the Supreme Lord. That's the nature, Srila Prabhupada here says, of faith. A faithful bhakta, or a devotee of pure faith, as was described earlier in the class by Ramapada Maharaj, devotee of pure faith means he has only Krishna to turn to. He depends solely and wholly on Krishna. He has no any other shelter. He's not taking shelter of his material abilities, he's not taking shelter of the demigods, he's not taking shelter of even other personalities. Exclusive dependence on Krishna. Krishna eka sharanam. This is the prime focal quality of a Vaishnava. And Krishna then directs a devotee, and he directs a devotee in many ways. In this case, personally, Lord Varaha will appear to do the needful. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a more general way in which he gives us direction. Dadadi, dadami, buddhi, yogam, tam, jinamam, upayam, tate. He gives us a particular intelligence, a particular type of intelligence, Srila Prabhupada says, spiritual intelligence, by which we can come to him, or by which we can actually take his direction. I refer to Tamal Krishna Maharaj as someone who's very intelligent, and my experience with him is that he was intelligent by birth, but particularly his intelligence was very much trained by Srila Prabhupada. And his extensive association with Srila Prabhupada allowed him to have this type of dadami buddhi, which was actually dadami buddhi yogam tam dinamam, which was the type of buddhi that was given by Krishna through Srila Prabhupada. And it was that particular training I was always very inclined to, that I wanted to actually learn from him. That was the main reason that I was both attracted to him and which I particularly asked him to explain or describe how it was that Srila Prabhupada was, that Srila Prabhupada had personally trained them. This was one of Srila Prabhupada's methods of guiding his disciples. He wanted to train his leaders. At that time, Srila Prabhupada would have his GBC men. The idea was that everyone came 1 month a year to be trained by Srila Prabhupada. Mahakrishna Maharaj had a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles when Srila Prabhupada was there in 69, 70. Prabhupada sat in L.A. and that was sort of his training headquarters. He had a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada at other times, and of course we know that that last year when he just sort of left New York, left Radha Damodar Party, and he came to be with Srila Prabhupada and really put that extraordinary intelligence to Srila Prabhupada's service, to take care of Srila Prabhupada, and from the
feedback that I had from other devotees who were with Srila Prabhupada at the time, Bhakti Shri Maharaj and Abhiram Prabhu. That Srila Prabhupada so much trusted Tamal Krishna Maharaj that he literally speaking put himself in Tamal Krishna Maharaj's hands. And he knew that not only is this person sincere and that he's faithful, but that he'll do the best thing. He'll do the thing as Srila Prabhupada would want to do it because he was trained that way. And that's unfortunately a real lack in today, is that we don't have that opportunity to be directly trained by Srila Prabhupada as some devotees were. And even, of course, Srila Prabhupada's disciples are more trained than others because we're trained, if not by direct association, but at least through others or by a culture, a tradition that represented Srila Prabhupada's very forceful presence, physical presence, vanic presence, that was there in those years between 1965 and 1977 that Srila Prabhupada was with us. The type of spiritual intelligence is not an ordinary thing. Hearing Krishna, how do you know, devotees often ask, how do you know what Krishna wants from you? It requires purity of heart. Just recently I was speaking with one devotee. We were arguing, debating an issue, whether a devotee who loses his Diksha Guru, does he actually need another spiritual master, either Diksha or Shiksha, or can Srila Prabhupada or someone else fulfill that role? The argument was even made that, well, why can't Super Soul act as the Guru? I replied that is a person pure enough to hear Super Soul? I can hear a Vaishnava speaking to me, and even then I have difficulty, or we have difficulty in directly understanding, or sometimes we tend to interpret what people mean. But is someone that pure at heart that they can actually hear the Super Soul? And although he is the Antaryami, although he is the Guru within the heart, there's someone that pure at heart that they can actually directly hear him all the time without interpretation. What to speak of Super Soul, and then of course even Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is certainly living forever in transcendental sound, but unless a devotee is also fully spiritually situated on a spiritual platform, does he directly hear what Srila Prabhupada is speaking in the same way as what the Super Soul is speaking? And if not, anyway, I don't want to get into the argument. I'm just saying that to have that type of buddhi, that type of directed intelligence, one does require a certain degree of purity of heart, a great degree of purity of heart, indeed, a pure heart. Circumstances are something that ultimately establishes Krishna's will, or tells us, well, what is Krishna's direction? What is it that Krishna wants? And then, of course, direct appearance. Here, what we'll see is Lord Brahma is contemplating, and while he contemplates, as a consequence of the shraddha, as his faith, Lord Varaha appears within his nose. It's a pretty extraordinary, you don't usually expect God to come out of your nose. And not only is he coming out in either in a forearm form or a regular Shamasunda form, he's coming out as a Varaha, as a boar. And it's extraordinary. It's something really very unusual. So as Vaishnavas, as devotees, we have sufficient tradition to warn us that Krishna also doesn't necessarily act in very traditional ways, in very predictable ways. He'll very act in very extraordinary ways, in ways that are actually inconceivable. And for that reason, his ways are inconceivable, as also his purpose is also inconceivable. What's the connection between a boar coming out of Lord Varaha's nose and the earth falling into the Garbhodak ocean. Time will tell, but it requires that time to tell before actually everyone, Lord Brahma and all the demigods included, everyone actually puts two and two together and they understand that the Lord has appeared with this mission of delivering the earth. This concept of inconceivability or the Lord's extraordinary behavior, it stretches the imagination to the extent that, of course, modern Indologists, scientists, people who study Indian culture, or even those who are closely connected with our Vaishnava tradition, tend to label all of these things as mythology. Everyone knows that boars don't come out of humans' noses, and that boars don't then all of a sudden expand and grow to universal proportions to fight with demons. It's a nice story. It has allegorical value, but it can't be real. Why it can't be real is just because people don't have experience of some things. Very often we see that the so-called proponents of science, who say that it's not scientific, don't particularly give very scientific reasons why it can't be so. And ultimately the onus is on them. We're establishing something from the basis of a parampara tradition in which literally you can say that Brahma saw Lord Varaha. He was the witness. And as an honest person, he communicated that knowledge through a line of unbroken cyclic succession, witnesses, who are to this present day telling us this boar was seen. That's good evidence. That's the type of evidence they accept in court. If you've got an eyewitness, or at least a reliable chain of eyewitnesses, you've got a strong case. And to just someone say that, I don't believe in it, you don't believe in it, that's all right. But then you give the evidence why you don't believe in it. Just recently in my writings, I was reading using reference material, and I was wading through this one particular book, wading through because it's so unpleasant to wade through scientists' readings, and this person is a Asian studies professor, and he wrote this very, very long thesis on the holy places of Vrindavan, and I was leading that research. Anyway, one particular point which he was dealing with was one stone in Mathura, which is called Mutrasthan. Mutra means urine. And the history of this stone is that when Vasudeva was carrying Krishna from the jail to Gokula, then Krishna was a little baby. So Krishna just started passing water on him. And of course, parents are overjoyed when these things happen. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you know, a mother, she considers the stool of a child like sandalwood paste. And so Vasudeva was very happy, but he put Krishna down on a stone. And then Krishna continued to pass urine. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited this place, and both Murari Gupta and one other, Lochan Das Thakur, who are contemporaries of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and wrote about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's parikrama. They describe how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw this stone where Krishna passed urine, and the stone has this yellow trace on it as a result of Krishna's urine. And the scientist says, and unfortunately that stone's gone. It's not there anymore. Someone stole it or something happened to it. So the scientist says, and of course, this is just mythology. And then he just goes on to speak about other things without explaining why, of course, it happens to be mythology that Krishna's urine can't stain stone. Doesn't disprove it. He just says that, of course, everyone knows because his urine doesn't stain stone, or other ordinary persons doesn't, but that doesn't mean that Krishna's doesn't. And we also have evidence.
So these things are sort of inconceivable. Another category, again, the stone thing, which scientists really discount as being just sort of hearsay, fabrications, imagination, is what devotees see when they go to Vrindavan, is Krishna's footprints in stone. You go to different places, Charana Pahadi, and you see Krishna played the flute and the stone melted. Now this doesn't make sense in any modern sense. Stone melts at a very high temperature. If you're standing on stone at such a high temperature, you're melting also. But they don't have this type of experience where stone will melt. Well, of course, for Krishna, high temperature, low temperature, it doesn't matter. But even then, there's also the cow's footprints. So cows may not be so immune to heat. But the cow's hoofprints are also present. Srimad Bhagavatam describes, gopis describe, that when Krishna plays the flute, then moving things, the Jamuna animals, they become inert, and inert things, like the trees and the stones and mountains, they begin to melt. It doesn't make sense, it's mythology, it's a story to them. For us, it's Dharma. Shastra says it. There are also eyewitnesses who saw it. One such eyewitness account of such an event is in Jagannath Puri temple. For those devotees who go into Jagannath Puri temple by the Garuda Stambha, at the foot of the Garuda Stambha, there is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's footprint. You seen it? Now there is a personality who we don't necessarily quote, or he's not necessarily an authority within our line, but still, he's a commonly well-known Orissan Vaishnava and was a contemporary of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He writes in one of his books that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, and when he saw Lord Jagannath, he was in ecstasy, and he says, I saw the stone melt. The stone melted right in his very presence. And the house more scientific than you get. You've got eyewitness who sees that stone melt. And just because scientists can't do it now, doesn't mean it matter that they can't do it in the future, because they're doing so many things now that no scientist could imagine 100 years ago, even 20 years ago. Computers, telephones, all of these things. I could have imagined these things. Anyway, inconceivable. I was speaking about inconceivable things. So this was inconceivable, Lord Brahma coming out of the nose of Lord Brahma. But we have faith, achintya, pavadibhava. We have to have faith in the inconceivable potency of the Lord, otherwise we actually don't have pure faith in Krishna. And not only do we have faith in Krishna's inconceivable potency, but we have faith in the inconceivable potency of Krishna's pure representatives. Things that sometimes don't make sense, like one example, in either 7th or 10th canto of Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada is talking about book distribution. He makes this very strong statement. He says that our Krishna consciousness movement is being maintained by the distribution of books. He says 50% of those funds are meant for printing books. As long as the members of this society maintain that principle, they will never be in financial want. But if they give less than 50%, then there will always be shortage, there will always be want, and there will be financial difficulty. Now that doesn't immediately make sense. For instance, economics may determine, all right, today our sanctan devotees brought in, say, $100, and 50 of that goes to BBT, but actually our expenditure is 70. So if we give 730 to BBT and 70, then our finances will be solved. Srila Prabhupada says, no. That may be an immediate problem, but seeing from a long-term perspective whereby Krishna, Srimati Radharani, is actually sending funds for this Krishna consciousness movement, you just stick to this principle and have faith in it. Don't worry about modern economy. Don't worry about what makes sense
to our little minds. Distribute books. 50% should go to book distribution, should go to BBT, and you make do with the other 50%. Of course, the other 50%, equally controversial, or maybe it's even more, is Grihastha's 50%. About 50% of your income is going, but it's not practical. You can't make a living. That's the small-scale argument of what sometimes temple presidents or GBCs also say. It's not practical. But a bore coming out of your nose isn't practical either, but it happens. Similarly, when we have faith in the inconceivable potency of the Lord and that He makes the impossible possible, and what's impractical becomes practical, and what's inconceivable becomes conceivable, then we see that, yes, anything can happen. Krishna's will manifest if, as Srila Prabhupada here states, we are never discouraged. We may become perplexed, we don't become discouraged, but we have full faith in Krishna and Krishna's will. How long does this class go to? 9 o'clock. Oh. Which 9 o'clock? All right, no, 9 o'clock. I don't usually go over. This is the note. And please announce today is the disappearance of Srila Jagannath Das Babaji and disappearance day of Srila Rasikananda Prabhu. Hare Krishna. All right, let me just, I guess, close. I was going to give another inconceivable example. This is also a controversial one. Read on folio, Srila Prabhupada tells farm managers, keep cows, have as many cows as possible. This is a real economic perplexing problem. Maintaining cows, because cows get milk, and we're supposed to be maintaining our temples, our deities, and actually the milk is supposed to be meant for our city projects, is also meant to go over there. But milk doesn't cost what you pay for it. Milk costs at least 3 times what you pay for it. Because milk is all subsidized, as most produce in modern society is subsidized. And the type of economy that Srila Prabhupada is talking about, the kind of economy by which Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows, that really requires it's very difficult to maintain that in isolation of the environment or the rest of the host society that you're living in. It has to happen because Srila Prabhupada said, keep as many cows as possible, but without actually the real spiritual intelligence to manifest Prabhupada's instruction, we've had also many disasters with not being able to properly care for our mothers, and therefore sometimes the answer is, it's not practical. It's practical, it's just a question of how it's practical. Can't say anything Prabhupada said is not practical. Just the problem is we're not practical enough to realize it. And make such things happen. Circumstances determine what Krishna's will is. Ramakrishna Maharaj was very much a person who was always concerned about controlling not just the people in his immediate vicinity, but circumstances as well. I remember a day or two before he left here, and I never got to see him. We were having kirtan in the other room, and he sort of got up at a certain point, and he went to pack and get ready, and he left really early in the morning, around 3:30. And just previous day before, Prabhupada Maharaj was very, very always concerned about getting feedback from particularly his godbrothers, much more than many devotees or the average devotee. So he would call these meetings with devotees and sit down. So he was writing his PhD, he was actually finishing it, and the topic was, which we were discussing, because I was in England still at the time, and so I would regularly visit him, first in Cambridge and in Oxford. And so the topic of the discussion was, all right, what was he going to do after the PhD? Come here, start a college in Mayapur, that was one idea. There were so many ideas
travel and preach? Is the society ready for him to get back into the type of managing that he was doing before? He was always feeling homesick for the good old Radha Damodar days of managing Sankirtan and book distribution. And so he called a meeting, and I wasn't there. And then afterwards, I came, so did he talk to them? And he said, yeah. He says, so what was the conclusion? What are you going to do? He says, no conclusion. He says, I'm waiting for Krishna to give a sign. He couldn't figure it out from his intelligence. Krishna wasn't directly manifesting it to him. He wasn't hearing it through his god brothers. But then circumstances determined, or Krishna manifested circumstances, Krishna's will, Krishna directed circumstances that on that road past Shantipur, then all of a sudden Krishna had his own plan. And his plan was that he wasn't going to do a college, and he wasn't to do any more Sankirtan preaching here, and he wasn't going to do some other things. He just manifest his will, must be his will. If you want to know why it happened like that, then join the ranks of the perplexed, because Puman Deda Vidhitsita, many people inquire. But still they're bewildered. But it happened, it certainly happened like that. And a person who had rendered so much service to Srila Prabhupada and dedicated his life, who was Srila Prabhupada compared in a certain way to Lord Brahma of ISKCON, Krishna had a particular plan. And that plan may not be clear to us. It's probably clear to him by now why it happened like that. Because he's now continuing serving Srila Prabhupada and Lord Krishna in the capacity that Krishna wanted him to. And that's our business, always maintaining faith, never becoming discouraged, even through difficulties, and having that conviction that one way or another, Krishna manifests his will to his devotees. My apologies for going so late. Shrutamaya Krishna Goswami Maharaj ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj ki jai. Shri Rashikananda Prabhu ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi. Nitai Gaur Premanandi.